Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
How you doing, Met fans, and welcome back to another edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel the Towers, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. I'm John Arezzi, and joining me, the star of the show, former Mets skipper, Mr. Terry Collins. Terry, welcome back.
Great to be back, John. I know we got a lot to talk about, but we're today on this show, we're going to pep up our fans a little bit more. I know everybody's down a little bit right now, so we got to pep them back up.
Yeah, well, you've been there. You've seen the roller coaster ride. That is a Major League Baseball season, and the Mets are experiencing that right now, but you've experienced it in your career for sure, especially 10 years ago. So we're going to bring on Andy Martino, and then we got Kevin Plawecki to talk to today. But right now, I'm in New York, and I've been here now twice in the last couple of weeks with Tunnel the Towers. They've been putting together this wonderful content that's going to be available next year on the 25th anniversary of 9/11 and how New York baseball helped heal New York. And so over the last couple of weeks, it's been really cool to hear the stories of Steve Phillips, who was the GM, and Johnny Franco with Jay Horowitz talking and reminiscing about how Shea Stadium and the Mets were so instrumental in helping. And I don't know if you know Sue Lucci or not.
I know her well, yeah.
What an amazing woman she is, Terry. I mean, and she spearheaded all of that in 2001 by getting the staging area set. And the stories that they had were phenomenal. They were just amazing. And then we did something with Howie Rose last week. And even Laura Albanese had from Newsday, had just a heartwarming story about her family and what they went through at 9/11. So we continue to do some really great things with Tunnel the Towers, and we're so happy to have them as part of all of everything that we do here at the Terry Collins Show. So it's great to see you again. What do you got coming up? What kind of traveling are you going to be doing?
Well, I'm going to New York this week. I'm actually going to attend the Mets Yankees game on the 4th of July with a couple friends, and they talked me into going, and I said, it'll be a lot of fun, so I'm going to do that. And hopefully it's a good game, and hopefully I catch them on a winning streak, so that'll even make it better.
Well, one thing for sure, it's going to be an exciting three-game set with the Yankees coming in. The Subway Series always is, and I'm sure you experienced that as a skipper in the dugout. I mean, it's just the fans are already amped up this year, but with the Yankees winning that first set at Yankee Stadium 2-1, it'll be an exciting series. But are you going to be attending incognito, or are you just going to be sitting there?
Well, I'm not going to pull a Bobby V, I can tell you. I'm just going to, I think they're such great fans, and there's so much going on. I don't even know how many people are going to, if I walk in to say, would know who I was anymore. You know, it's been so long, but I'm looking forward to it. You know, and I asked my friend who invited me to go, and his name's Michael Heck. And I said, Michael, are we going to sit behind, we got seats, and we got a box? He said, no, we're going to sit behind home plate. I said, Okay, well, you better be ready, Dave. this may not be, you know, hopefully you can see some of the game. So, but I'm looking forward to it. I think it'd be a great time.
Yeah, and then before we start the leadoff, we have Andy Martino today. I did want to talk to you about the Alumni Classic. That is, I guess, a big project that Jay Horowitz has kind of helped spearhead.
It's going to be a blast. I mean, I know you saw the rosters, and, you know, fortunately, it's only three innings, and we lost one of my players already. Noah Syndergaard signed a contract to get back in the game and start pitching again, so he won't be part of my team. But the City Field guys, we got a pretty good team, and some of those guys are still in pretty good shape. So I'm afraid that Bobby V's team is going to be in for a tough time. I got Bartolo. You know, Harv's going to be. I know Harv's probably still in good shape. You know, I'm not sure Johan's going to pitch very much, but you know, Ari Dickey, my gosh, you know. Can you imagine not getting an at bat for 10 and 11, and you got to face a knuckleballer? That's not even fair. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. And then that's taking place September the 13th, and it'll be at Citi Field. And you'll be in the dugout, I guess, co-managing with Jerry Manuel.
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to seeing Jerry, one of my favorite people. We managed against each other a long time. And my first year back with the Mets, Jerry was managing, and really was really helpful in spring training, getting me involved and getting me to get to know the players. And I like Jerry a lot. I'm glad he's going to be there.
Well, that is September 13th, Citi Field. It's the Alumni Classic. Jay must be going nuts to putting this together.
He's the master at it. I mean, he's, you know, John, you and I have talked about him. He's one of those guys, when you get a call from Jay Horowitz, you just say yes. To what I want to do this, and everybody, I'm sure he didn't get one no. I know he loves this. He loves those former players. They love him. So it'll and they do it upright. So it is going to be a lot of fun. There'll be a huge crowd for that too. Also,
yeah, it's definitely one of those games that you gotta attend. It's going to be such a great way to reminisce. It's going to be a great way to see your heroes that were parts of the last decade at Shea Stadium and the first decade at Citi Field. So we look forward to that. All right, Terry, let's get right to the leadoff with Andy Martino. So let's bring Andy on. Let's get right to the leadoff. The Mets are limping home for a six-game homestand this week after being swept by the Pittsburgh Pirates, who look like the 1927 Yankees over this weekend, outscoring New York 30 runs over the three games, the Mets scoring just four. It was the biggest run disparity in the history of the New York Mets. The Mets come home. They have the Brewers for three. Yankees come in as well. Since losing Kodai Senga on June the 12th, they've free-fallen. We're going to cover it all right now on the leadoff, so let's get right into it with one of the top New York baseball insiders, Andy Martino from SNY. Andy, welcome back to the Terry Collins Show.
Hello, John. Hello, Terry. How you guys doing?
Doing good, Andy. Thanks for coming on again today.
Of course.
Yeah, we're doing well. It's been a rough month of June for the New York Mets, Andy. You know, the month started off pretty good. Mets went 9-2 from June 1st to the 12th. Senga goes down, and that's where it really started. On Friday the 13th, they had a wonderful outing by Clay Holmes, but he gets lifted early, and then the team proceeds to drop seven in a row. They've not recovered since then. They're a game and a half behind the Phillies right now in the NL East. They have a razor-thin lead in the wild card, and they have that big homestand coming up. Andy, and then Terry, what's needed to get the wheels back on this team right now?
Pitching, really. There are multiple issues here. Everything, the wheels are coming off, as you said, John. But there's a path that you can see, in my view, to the lineup becoming longer. Number one, Lindor had a rough weekend. They need their stars to perform. Soto obviously is having an historic run, so that's great. But they need all the stars to be firing, basically, because the lineup's not long enough otherwise. But there are paths to lengthening that lineup. Like, for example, Jesse Winker started his rehab. That's an upgrade at the DH spot. Vientos is back. He did not have a good weekend in Pittsburgh at the plate, but I still believe in Mark Vientos as a hitter because we've seen it at the highest level. So there are ways, and if they can get Alvarez right, I mean, there are ways in which you can see, all right, here's how the lineup is longer. And when Jeff McNeil's batting eighth, that's perfect. That's when you have a really relentless offense like they had planned. And in order for all that to happen, you need some of the younger guys to perform. So anyway, you can, I'm not guaranteeing that's going to happen this year, but you can see a path to it. The pitching's more troubling. And that's really, to me, what probably needs to be addressed to the extent that they can at the trade deadline more than anything else, because they just had so many injuries. And now they have a guy like Peterson all of a sudden looking a little tired after that great run that we had, that he had, excuse me. You have the obvious injuries to Senga, McGill, and Canning out for the season. And I thought that Montas's start on Sunday was really troubling for the Mets, because his first start was really encouraging. You're like, all right, Frankie Montas, back end guy at this point of his career. Then he comes off the IL. He's throwing 97 mile an hour sinkers. He's got the four seam. He's got like, it's like, oh, all right, this guy's got some high end stuff still. And then he didn't have it at all on Sunday. So which Frankie Montas do the Mets have? That was it wasn't just a loss. It was a troubling performance from a guy that they kind of need now. So, John, I think it's about shoring up the pitching, which, of course, is easier said than done in mid-season. But that, to me, that's the main issue.
Yeah, and I agree, Andy. I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, but, you know, again, the game has changed so much. You know, no longer do you prepare a pitcher in spring training to go deep into a game. I mean, right. We're watching guys come out after 72 and 73 pitches. You know, I remember, you know, in spring training where you wanted to make sure your big guns were at 100 to 110 pitches coming out of spring training so that the game's easier. And Frankie's outing, I think, again, it goes back to the – you used to talk to the old pros that, you know, they used to go 9 innings in spring training for the sole reason that their first start, which would have been Frankie's first start, he looked great. Well, he's all geeked up. He's back in the big leagues. He's the adrenaline's going like crazy. And your second start, all of a sudden, you're wiped out from all the energy you spent in the first game. And that's why those old guys used to tell me, and they'd say, Terry, you know, you got to get your pitchers ready, not just for their first start, because the adrenaline will take care of that. Mm-hmm. It's their second start that you got to worry about. And that's what Frankie went through. And I haven't seen really enough of him to determine where it's going to go. But I do think, you know, what we saw in the first game is a little bit of a semblance of what he may become once he, again, continues to get himself in pitching form at the major league level. But, yeah, you just can't – I mean, I every time I turn on the TV and turn on a game, I mean, there are 4 and 5 relievers in every game. I mean, my gosh almighty, that's going to – that you look in August, those guys are going to be shot. So, you know, it's about the pitching, and I think, and I do believe their lineup's going to be fine. We went through that, as John and I talked before the show started today. You know, last year on May 31st, we couldn't wait to get May over, and we couldn't wait to get it over. Well, now we can't wait to get June over. So, and I think there's nothing better than to get home. You know what? These guys are frustrated, and frustrated good major league players they're dangerous. Because, you know, that intenseness comes back and coming back home in front of the fans. Of course, they got a huge weekend series with the Yankees coming up over the holiday weekend. It'll be jam-packed, so the energy level will pick up, and they just got to get it back on track. And, you know, they can't get too down. I mean, I saw that, you know, they've had 2 players meetings this month. You know, meetings can wear you out, pal. Believe me. That's why. You know, that's why in baseball we play every day, and you know, you got to be careful of saying too many things. So I think they're going to be okay. I do. You know, here they get probably maybe the worst streak they're going to have all year long, and are only a game and a half out of first place, and still have one of the best records in the league. So they're going to be okay.
We certainly hope they turn it around quickly. The fans panic, Terry. But 10 years ago, June 2015. You had a 7-game losing streak. You started off great. Then you finished with a 12-15 record for the month of June, as this team has just done. Eerie coincidence, but it goes to show that, hey, anything can happen. Look what happened 10 years ago. 7-game losing streak. Identical records. You made it to the World Series. Can you offer up any advice or encouragement to the team or the fans based on what you went through at that time in 2015 and what has to happen, in your opinion, to kind of like right this situation and say, hey, listen, like you just said, the season's not over.
Oh, no. And John, there's no easy answers, as Andy alluded to before. There's no easy answers. The point is, these are good players, yeah. and they got to play good. As he said, you know, every team there's a surprise. So this year, let's just say the surprise is going to be we're not Soto. Maybe it's going to be Jesse Winker, just as an example. You got to have something that somebody's not expecting. But in the long run, your good players have to play good, because that's the core of your team. That's the middle of your lineup, and they've got to get the job done. And when you've got two or three of those guys in the middle of that lineup who aren't producing, now you're asking those young players to step up. That's not their job yet. You know, they can help out, but they're not the guys who are supposed to be carrying this team. And you put that added pressure on these young guys, and I'll tell you, sometimes you can get burned by it. So again, it's about they got to stabilize their pitching. And as Andy said, there's good players that got to start stepping up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, last year, you know, when they had their funk, they did have the leadership of J.D. Martinez, and then Iglesias came in with some energy, more of a spark. And as you were saying, Terry, these young kids, you can't put all this pressure on them because they don't perform. They're not used to it. But the leadership of the team maybe has to do more. You know, right now there's no OMG, there's no grimace, there's none of that crazy stuff that's going on. They just need a spark. They need a win, which leads to another win, and they need that pitching to get right. Because they've used 32 different, Andy, correct me if I'm wrong, but 32 guys already so far.
Yeah, and I believe they used the most pitchers in the major leagues in March, in June. Every it's felt like March with the amount of pitching changes the poor Carlos has had to do. That's probably why I said that. Every day there's another roster move or more than one roster move, the pitching carousel. It's a survival mode. It's not a great situation, obviously. So, yeah, and they just have to hope that it stabilizes through the season. But, yeah, you're right. It's not sustainable. I mean, there's so many pitchers they're using. It kind of shows you how long the season is. Because they went weeks early in the year without making a single roster move on the pitching side. So the long season cliche is said so often for a reason. And any time a season ends well, there's a terrible stretch in it that's forgotten. Sometimes those terrible stretches don't get right, obviously. It's just the way sometimes years go sideways. And we don't know this is going to be yet, obviously. But it is important to remember for perspective that it's every team that does well, just about, other than the 27 Yankees or the 98 Yankees, these teams that go wire to wire, the 84 Tigers, most good teams have a really ugly stretch, and the Mets have to hope that's all this is.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing, when you talk about so many pitchers and how great the pitching staff was touted less than a month ago, you know, the press conference that David had with the media and how everything was just – it was working. The starting pitching ERA was under 3. Mm-hmm. And now you have a situation which really surprised me. It was like Richard Lovelady, Dickie Lovelady. Mm-hmm. I mean, he comes in, they sign him, he pitches one inning, then he gets DFA'd. He goes through, you know, waivers or whatever, and he doesn't accept his assignment to AAA. And then the Mets sign him as a free agent, and he's back in the game yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have happened 30 days ago.
No, they wouldn't have signed him in the first place 30 days ago, right? And that, but that was probably one of those weird ones, John, where they gave him a little wink, wink, like just become a free agent, decline the assignment. We'll get you back in 2 days. You know, that's not how a team wants to be operating, but at least the Mets are capable of, you know, there are front offices that move at a more of a glacial pace, and the one where I'll compliment the David Stern's front office, like boom, 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 boom. We got this, let's do that. You're DFA'd, you're back, da, da, da. It's the only way you can really operate when things are this bad, and at least they're being proactive. You know, treating each game like it's really important by making sure you assemble the best bullpen for that day is kind of what they're doing.
Yeah. On the in the minor leagues, you know, you still have a couple of really good prospects there that are getting closer. Guys like Nolan McLean in AAA is doing really well. And Jonah Tong in AA is kind of electric there. But do you think on both of you, Terry and Andy, are they going to just still wait on these young kids to develop more, or could there be a knee-jerk reaction by maybe bringing either of them or both of them possibly in this season?
I don't know what their status is. John, I sometimes the business side takes place. You want to start the clock too soon on guys. The Mets have shown, because of what they did with Pete Alonso, they're not afraid to take those chances. So I think if the pitching doesn't start to come together, you might see those guys up. I mean, hey, look, they might as well give them a shot to see what they've got so that they know where to head. If this doesn't get going back on track, you might as well see what those young kids can do or what they need to do better for them to be successful at the big league level. And the only way to find out is to get them in big league games.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Be successful at the big league level. And that's where sometimes, Terry, I bet you agree with me on this. The overhyping of every single decent prospect creates these expectations where it's like, well, you don't know how these guys are going to do until they make this jump from AAA to the hardest league in the world, Major League Baseball. And so it's easy to, I mean, you could say it's all their position player prospects right now have obviously had their ups and downs, more downs than ups this year. It's like, well, maybe some of these guys weren't destined to be stars in the first place, and they just get so overhyped. And I think we're getting some of that with the pitching. So you get a name like Blake Tidwell, very exciting Tidwell, and then we see him pitch in the big leagues, it's like, ooh, that's not quite ready. Or you see Ronnie Mauricio swing at a curveball, and you go, oh, okay. The hype then meets the reality, and we're seeing a lot of that this year with the Mets prospects. Specifically to your question, John, about the pitching, one thing I'll say is that the Mets have shown themselves willing this year to jump a development schedule to help the big league team because they did it with Mauricio. We were hearing as reporters for weeks that, no, Ronnie's on a progression. He had missed all this time with the injury. His development is paramount. He's going to be learning how to play back-to-backs again and then three in a row, and then we're going to go through all that. And then the next thing you know, Vientos gets hurt, and Mauricio's on a plane to California to join the team. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying they showed their willingness to forget about the development schedule we set. We got to win games at the big league level. So will they do that with the Jonah Tong? Well, they tried it with Mauricio already this year. So we'll see.
Yeah, Andy, that's a legitimate point. As being a former farm director, you've got to like your players. You've got to like them. But you also have to be smart enough to know if they're ready. And that was one of the things I learned when I was managing at the AAA level. I went many, many years without watching a Major League Baseball game because I had my own team I had to get through. And as soon as the season was over, I was either in the instructional league or going to winter ball. I didn't watch Major League Baseball games until I got brought up in September one year when I was managing with the Pirates and got to sit on the bench next to Jim Leland and got to watch the action and the speed of the game. And all of a sudden you would think about those players that you had in AAA and you say, you know what? Now I know why he couldn't play here yet. Because he wasn't ready to do this or he wasn't ready to do that. And you are absolutely right. It's great to overhype your prospects so everybody hears about them. But when you got to rely on them, man, you better make sure that they're ready to compete at the big league level. Because, I remember years ago, Tom Lasorda and Jim Leland told me, he said, young players are great. They're fun to have around. They're a great energy. But you play too many of them, you're going to get your butt fired. And they are absolutely right. So, you've got, that's that fine line. What you're talking about is you better make sure you've got coaches and instructors at the minor league level who know what it takes to play in the big leagues, especially in today's game with the power pitching the way it is. If you have a guy who's, I saw there was I think Kansas City this weekend, I saw them play, they got that big left-handed hitter that's got that tremendous power. He swings and misses way too much.
Yeah,
but I guess they don't have expectations right now, so they're saying, "Oh, let's let them learn at the big league level." I'll tell you one thing: that can do some damage to anybody's ego. And if you don't have any success, because there's going to be a time you're going to look in the mirror and say, "You know what? I can't play here. These guys are just too good." So you've got that's a fine line when you're dealing with young players. So you've got to develop them in the right way, I think.
That's a great point. You really have to know each individual too to say, is this guy going to be benefited from being overmatched a little here, or is like you said, Terry, is he going to hurt his confidence? And I think that was the Mets' calculation in sending down Alvarez. They're really trying to look at this young man closely for a while and go, what would be the best thing here? Go down, dominate, be a man among boys in AAA, and be like, oh yeah, I can play, or stay here and try to grind it out. With Alvarez, obviously, they decided on the former. Go down and rediscover yourself and your confidence. But yeah, it's got to be different with every player, and those have got to be tough calls. And one thing I'll say positive about the Mets on this side is that it's nice that David Stearns hired Andy Green in the sense to run player development, in the sense that you got a field guy, a baseball guy, former major league manager, because, you know, farm directors used to look like Terry, and now sometimes they look like, you know, Ivy League geniuses. So I think when you're developing players, it's nice to have the trust in a baseball guy like Andy Green to make.
I agree. I totally agree. Andy, Andy Green is the perfect guy. You know, one of the things I always wanted to do, Andy, years ago when I first got my first major league managing job, you know, I had some young players came up, and I said to myself, if I ever ran a minor leagues, I'm going to take my best prospects and I'm going to challenge them. I'm going to put them over their head in the minor leagues so that they learn how to deal with failure, so that they're not, they understand, hey, there's going to be times where you're not going to hit, and how are you going to get out of it? And so that's part of the process, because you get to the big league level and you fail and you fail and you fail and you fail and you say, I don't have any way to get out of it. And I had some players tell me that, you know, I've always hit, I'm not hitting, and I can't fix it. Well, you know what? You better be able to fix it at the big league level. And that's what we're seeing right now with some of these young guys. And I know, and I think the world of Kevin's, I think he does a great job as a hitting guy. So I just think, again, we say it a lot, but the big term is patience, and you got to have it no matter where you are. And right now we got to write off the month of June, and let's start the month of July, and let's get on a hot streak. And like you said, Andy, we'll look back in September and we'll forget June even happened.
Yeah. Yeah. That could very well be, for sure.
Now, with the trade deadline approaching a month ago, no one even really was talking about making a big move or shaking things up a little bit. In 2015, Terry, of course, Kelly Johnson comes in, Juan Uribe comes in, Sandy goes out and makes that huge deal for Cespedes. Do you think that the Mets are now in the mindset of perhaps looking to make a big splash with a potential trade, whether it's pitching or hitting?
You know, for me, the answer is, yeah, I think they have the mindset to do that. You know, they've gotten a chance to take a look at some of their young players now. Remember, we gave up Michael Fulmer for Cespedes. So the next year, Michael Fulmer was rookie of the year. So we gave a lot up to get a big piece that helped us win. And I know what's going on right now in New York, and with the start they had, they believe they can win, and they can win big this year. So I think they're ready, and they're looking for the right piece that come the end of July, that you're going to see, you might see some new names in that lineup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And well, look at the move that they made to get Javi Baez, and look what they gave away.
Yeah.
Guy that could be an MVP this year, Pete Crow Armstrong, yeah, so anything can happen from now to the trade deadline, and, you know, the ship needs to be righted. And one thing I just want to get back to are those prospects, because you have Beatty, who has been pretty inconsistent, up and down. Luis Angel Acuna is now down. He shined defensively and on the base pass, but didn't contribute as much as they expected with the bat. Vientos has certainly not looked like the Mark Vientos of last year as well. And then you have Mauricio, and you have all of these kids going back and forth. So the development process, and I think with a guy like Vientos especially, he's got to get back on track. And he just don't look like the same guy as last year. Have you noticed that, Andy?
Yeah, no, I don't know how to diagnose it or fix it, certainly. That would be above my pay grade, but it's weird. Yeah. I really believe in this player because – the confidence, the power, the whole package. And the nice thing about, you know, Mark Vientos is a super engaging young man. I interact with him all the time. And he is really deeply confident person. Like with Beatty, sometimes you worry how things are affecting him. Vientos, he's like, no, I'm good. And he's right, he is good. So that's good. Like they're not worried about him getting really down or losing his confidence short or long term. Right now, obviously, his performance isn't matching that confidence, and it's been going on for longer than anyone would have thought after what we saw, especially in the postseason last year. So it's definitely different, but I can tell you, and I think this is good in his case. It's good for players to be a little even overconfident because they have to believe in themselves at this level. It's so mentally difficult, and Vientos hasn't lost any of that for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's a great point, Andy. And I'll tell you what I thought what Carlos Mendoza did the other day, hit him second. You know, after just getting back, you put him in number two hole, which is in today's batting orders are a huge position. You're hitting him ahead of Soto. So I thought that was a huge confidence pat on the back saying, hey, we believe in you, son. So go out there and play. And I thought that was a great move by Carlos.
Good point.
Certainly was. Well, finally, it starts with the next six games, three with Milwaukee, who is right on the Mets' tail for the wild card. And then, of course, the second round of the Subway Series for 2025 at Citi Field this time, one game at a time. Would you both say that going 500 on this homestand would be a good goal, and that final road trip before the All-Star break where everyone seems to need a break? What are the hopes for the Mets? Would 500 baseball be acceptable from now to the break?
Terry, what do you think on that? Because I always – my knee-jerk on these kinds of things is always to be like, hey, you can't really plan it out that way. You try to win every day and see how it shakes out. But would you internally, Terry, think like, all right, okay, we got to go 500 here. Is that a thought that a team itself would have?
You know, Andy, I don't ever remember – you know, once in a while you'll think about it. Like if I was sitting in Carlos, if I was sitting in the manager's office today thinking about the next six games, I'd be saying, you know, we got to go 4-2 right now. We got to go 4-2. Like let's, you know, get us back on track. You know, let's win two, you know, win both series. Let's just start out, you know, that's what you say in spring training all the time. Hey, let's just win series. If we you know, keep from being swept, win majority of our series, at the end of the year, you're going to look up and be happy. So I think going into the All-Star break, 4-2, close to that, or even, you know, 3-4 games over 500 in the next 10 games before the All-Star break, I think you got to say we got to be over 500 to kickstart this thing again.
There you go.
All right, excellent. Andy, as always, we always appreciate your time here on the Terry Collins Show. Your insights are just fabulous. Why don't you let everybody know where they could find you on TikTok, which is pretty active for you right now, and also talk about the two books that you got out.
Well, thank you for that. I wrote Cheated about the Astros scandal, which feels like a while ago now, The Yankee Way, which is about Brian Cashman's tenure running the Yankees, and let's see if the Mets can write a story here that's book worthy this year. That we're we'll see. I don't know what kind of book it'll be yet, but but we'll see. Anyway, that's where you can find me. And of course, on Baseball Night in New York, which Terry needs to be on more often. We always enjoy it when he's there. So there you go.
Thanks, Andy. Well, thanks for coming on again. Good to see you. I'll see you soon.
All right.
Appreciate
see you guys
your
later.
Time. Thank you. Always great to have Andy Martino and Terry Collins together on these leadoff segments. But let's talk to you about what's going on with the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. We've been up here in New York taping some wonderful content for some really special stuff that's scheduled to happen next year. I've been so proud to be a part of all of that. But let's talk about what's going on this Independence Day for Tunnel to Towers. The foundation is ensuring financial freedom for the families of 25 additional falling first responder families. They're going to have a future without a mortgage. These home recipients live in more than a dozen states across this country. This is part of the Tunnel to Towers pledge. If a first responder is killed in the line of duty and leaves behind young children, the foundation will pay off their mortgage. And since its inception, T2T has delivered more than 1,500 mortgage-free homes. And the Tunnels to Towers Foundation was born from the ashes of 9/11, started by the family of New York firefighter Stephen Siller, killed at the World Trade Center. While the foundation's early beneficiaries were in the New York area, the program now helps families in all corners of the United States. In addition to first responders, if a service member is killed in the line of duty, leaves behind young children, Tunnel to Towers comes in, pays off the mortgage. And if a first responder or service member is catastrophically injured, the foundation will provide a specially adapted mortgage-free smart home, as they did by awarding that Memorial Day of this year. They do so much. You can learn more about the foundation's programs and recipients at t2t.org. And Tunnel to Towers is also committed to eradicating veteran homelessness. The foundation has now broken ground on 10 veterans' villages across the country, including at the Jersey Shore recently. These facilities will provide permanent housing for veterans facing housing instability. In addition to a home, Tunnel to Towers will offer comprehensive services, including counseling, job training, and benefits assistance. You can help with all of these programs by giving just $11 a month. You can also donate a car or land. Please go to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. And we will return with a special Talking with TC with a member of the 2015 National League champion New York Mets, catcher Kevin Plawecki, right after this message from Tunnel to Towers.
Larry was in a really bad accident and broke his neck in the line of duty.
I get a phone call early one morning from the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, said we're going to provide you and your family with a smart home. At that time, I just almost just passed out. I just couldn't believe it.
They heard his story, which means someone's out there listening.
By giving $11 a month, you're joining us on our mission to do good. Go to t2t.org now.
On today's Talking with TC, we welcome former catcher for the New York Mets, who drafted him in the first round in 2012. He made his major league debut in April of 2015, big part of the 2015 Mets NL Championship squad. Spent parts of four seasons with the New York Mets, ending his tenure in 2019, going to the Cleveland Indians in the trade. He played for the Indians, Red Sox, and Rangers as a major leaguer. Also spent some time with the Pittsburgh Pirates, Washington Nationals, and San Diego Padres organization, retiring as an active player at the end of the 2024 season. It's a pleasure to welcome Kevin Plawecki to the Terry Collins Show. Kevin, welcome to Talking with TC.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Kevin, we're great to have you on. So I think you need to tell the Mets fans who are watching this podcast, so what do you got going for you on your plate now?
Yeah, we just retired this past, winter from actual playing days, and now doing some catching work with the Padres organization, going around helping out different affiliates with them just on the catching side. It's been great to stay involved with the game. Obviously, ended my career with the Padres and their organization, so they've treated me really well. It's just been a good transition. I didn't really know what I wanted to do after playing, but I knew I wanted to be with my family a ton more. I had missed out on a bunch of stuff with the kids. And was ready to be a dad, a lot more than anything. So it's been a good transition for me to both be staying in the game and be with the kids a lot more. So it's been awesome.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you're still doing something, Kev, because all the years that I had, when I was around you, you were one of those guys that as coaches we'd sit around and talk, and of course you were one of those guys. I always thought you were going to manage one day. I thought when this guy's done playing, he's going to manage. Your thought process behind the plate. I remember, we'd have our coaches meetings, and there was always that talk about game calling, pitch calling, because we had all those great young pitchers, and I thought you always got yourself ready, got them ready, and when you had your opportunities to catch, man, the games seemed like they were pretty easy, and you had to catch some pretty tough guys.
Yeah, I mean, I did, but they also made my job extremely easy as well. So, obviously as prepared as possible. And then once you go in between those lines and you got those dogs on the mound and everybody else behind them, it made it a lot of fun, some awesome years and it was some good times.
So, Kev, of all those guys, was there one guy that you really liked to catch or was there one guy that you said, God, this guy's tough for me to catch?
On the starting rotation side, not really. Honestly, the hardest guy we had to catch was Familia, because he threw like 102 with that sinker and you had to be ready to block it. Like, that was the hardest guy to catch out of all of them. But I'll never forget that game. You double switched me into the game like with two outs in the ninth with Darnell, and we were up with a one run lead, a guy on third base, and it was like I was rolling out or whatever in the cage, and I had to go in there and catch Familia. I'm like, of all people, I got to go into the game right now and be ready to block 102 with sink with the tying run on third base. But we ended up getting the job done.
Yeah, I didn't. Obviously, I didn't. Wasn't worried about that part of it, I can tell you.
Yeah.
Well, I know, when you would, so that, like there was during those times, not, and I know, times have changed a little bit, but I always thought Syndergaard was tough to catch. you know, 100 miles an hour, it had some movement to it. You know, I always thought Harv might be easy to catch because he had such great command. And you know, Jake, those two guys, they commanded the ball. But I thought Noah would be a tough guy to catch.
He would be a tough guy to catch. Match was the same way, coming from the left side. You know, he was had electric stuff coming from, you know, the left side. So between all of them, if you had to pick a righty and a lefty, definitely Noah and Steven were the, I would say, quote unquote, the hardest to catch. But, you know, just like anything, the more you see it, you know, the more you get used to their misses and everything. And those guys were obviously around the zone enough to where you knew where the balls were going to be at. But they did have electric stuff, you know, with Noah throwing over 100 and, you know, Matsy coming, you know, back foot sliders to righties and whatnot. You got to be kind of ready for it all. But like I said, those guys were fun to catch. And if you can catch those guys, you can catch just about anybody in the league. So they made my job a lot easier.
Well, I always thought, you know, if you go back and think about it, you know, when the days you played, there wasn't a lot of shaking going on. I mean, you put the signs down and they threw it and, you know, their stuff played for it. I mean, they were really a great bunch of guys to be around and their stuff was off the charts. So, Kevin, one of the reasons I'm really happy you're on, you got to explain to me PitchCom. I don't know anything about it. I don't know if it works a lot. Did you like it? Did you not like it? Is it, I don't know what the earpiece the catcher wears, what it's all about. So can you explain what PitchCom is for me?
Yeah. So, I mean, to be completely honest with you, I hated it at first. I thought it was the dumbest thing in the world. I didn't think I would like it. I was against the whole pressing buttons thing. I was old school in a way. I wanted to use signs and yada, yada, yada. But we started it, and I believe it was spring training of 22, I believe it was, because we didn't have 21 playoffs. So I believe it was 22 spring. I first got introduced to hearing it or something like that in spring training. And we tried it one night. I didn't have the tube that came into my ear, so I just had it echoing throughout my helmet. I'm like, the whole batter can hear this whole thing. It just didn't sound right. And I was like, this is the most. And then I was like, this is spring training. So imagine when you get, you know, 30, 40,000 people in the stands and this thing's cranked up. I'm not going to be able to hear it. Long story short, once we got into the season and kind of got used to it, you kind of put a tube in. I did come around to the idea of it. Now, basically what it is the catcher has the buttons, right? And it's all programmed, pre-programmed. Different teams have it set differently with what buttons mean what. Your pickoffs are on there, your fastballs, your sliders, your locations, all of it are on there. And so it's just a way for, you know, I guess a faster way for the game to be, you know, brought to the field. But more importantly, I think with the whole sign stealing and stuff, you don't have to worry about your sequences with, you know, with signs and getting crossed up and all that. So it definitely has a lot more benefits than not. And it took me a little bit to come around to the idea. And, you know, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I know it's different. I never, ever thought that it would be in the game of baseball, but there's a lot of things that I never thought would be in the game of baseball. And, you know, this one is, you know, we're constantly evolving and this was pretty cool. And I really didn't know I would like it as much as I did.
You know, Kevin, and the other part of the game today, and I know it's, you know, I've been asked this question a lot, and you know, this is the pitch clock. And I know when catchers, everybody talks about the pitchers, but does the pitch clock change your thought process or with PitchCom? I mean, do you have to be more prepared? Is it, or how do you slow the game down for the pitchers when they're with that clock? Because it's, I mean, there's got to be times when, you know, those guys got to take a chance, their breath a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a great question. I had a conversation with our low A affiliate with the Padres the other day, just because with the times you can't call time with nobody on base, you've got to be very strategic with when you use your times and with guy on base, whatever you call time as that clock's getting down, use a disengagement. So it's, these young guys are having to really learn this from a young age, trying to slow the game down. That's a very hard thing to do, but no, you're right. And the clock is a whole nother animal to this. Something I was very opposed to, and certain things about it I like, certain things I don't really care for. I don't care for an automatic result, you know, based off no action of the pitch. Like, I hate the automatic ball, automatic strike. I just think there's a competitiveness in me that I just don't care for. Now, I like the pitch clock from a sense of like speeding the game up and having it to where things can't drag out. Absolutely. I think it's awesome. So I've come around on a lot of those things as well, but from the catching side, it is it is harder to slow the game down, if you will, in a sense, you know, especially, you know, you've got to have your pitches, you know, you got to be on the same page with your pitcher, you know, and you got to be able to give that sign quick enough so that your pitcher has an opportunity to shake. And that's a conversation that we have all the time with these, you know, younger guys here, the first time coming out of Arizona, you know, trying to slow the game down, but also you got to be prepared, you know, you got to be prepared with that next sign. And it's a work in progress, but, you know, there's a lot of pros, a lot of cons, but like I said, the game's evolving and we got to evolve with it.
You know, Kev, you know, you used to, obviously the days you'd catch, you'd have your meeting with the pitching coach and the starting pitcher. Are they more intense today because of the fact that the game is sped up so much? Do you have to have a bigger, more precise game plan before you start than you used to have?
No, not really. And honestly, it's always been about your pitcher strengths, right? Like what is your pitcher strength? And it's, when I went to a game, it was no matter if my pitcher strength was the batter strength. It's like, okay, sometimes it's mano a mano, and you can't deviate too much from that just because you have a time, you know, clock on you or whatever, and you got to read the swings, but you also got to be thinking along with the game back there as well to keep the flow of it, and you build that trust with your pitcher. And as far as the meetings and stuff go, it's all pretty much the same. Obviously, a lot more information than what it used to be with heat maps and this and that, and you can get lost in the weeds for days on all that stuff, and it's all great. But yeah, I think it's important for, you know, one catcher might be different, one pitcher might be different on the information they're looking at, and talking between innings of a game plan with the first, you know, 3-4 batters you're about to go out there and face and go out there and try and execute. And, you know, that's pretty much been the same ever since I, you know, got into the game, especially in the big leagues.
Yeah. You know, Kev, I know that with PitchCon too, there's certain pitchers who they call their own pitches. Did you have any of those guys?
Nobody really had on their belt. Like I had, like Nathan Eovaldi, for example. I'm not going to get too into the weeds, but we had signs, you know, kind of whatever in like motions he would do with his body or whatever he would do would kind of be signaling to me what pitch he wanted to throw. And I would put the button down, or I would just nod my head, yes, I got you, you know, cause he does all these weird quirks on the mound. So, you know, we're kind of signaling to each other what he's wanting or what I'm wanting. And that's another way to speed it up. But guys, you know, Michael King has it on his belt. You know, I think Pivetta has it on his belt. You know, there's a lot of people that pitchers like having it on their belt. And by all means, if you want to, you know, save me from going down on the buttons and be my guest. But I don't recall anybody necessarily having the buttons and being too button heavy on the mound.
Yeah. Now they're talking next year, Kev, about appealing balls and strikes. You know, and obviously being a catcher, you're allowed to, in the minors, you're allowed three of them a game. Is that three appeals a game?
Two now. They might've changed it to two in AAA.
Oh, two. Have you seen it? Do you like it? Does it work?
I've dealt with all of it. Yeah. That's the worst part about being in the minor leagues the last 2 years was being a part of that. 23 was when they had automatic balls and strikes. And that's where the catcher can catch it. No matter where it's at, it's the umpire's being told ball or strike, it can nick it by this much. That's a joke. That part's a joke. But on the flip side of it, if you're going to do anything, I think the challenge system is good. I think it holds the umpires accountable. I think that some calls in big spots are a little egregious and can be a little bit, you know, umpires are human beings too. Like the game speeds up on them. They miss stuff. It's all part of it. You know, so having been a part of both the automatic zone and the challenge system, I definitely think the challenge system is better because it allows the catchers to still catch. You still should be able to like catch the ball properly. There's an art to that. There's something about quote unquote stealing a strike, in my opinion, that benefits the count, benefits the game. And if you take that completely away with just a straight up automated system, I think that just, I'm a purist in a way. And I also appreciate the position and the work that goes into receiving because I've done it my whole life. But there's a lot of pros to, you know, having the challenge, and we'll see what happens. And I think it's inevitable. It's coming to the game, coming to the big leagues. And, you know, I think two, maybe three challenges is really good. You know, anything more than that, people are just going to be standing out there challenging all day long. And I think also too, the players will realize, hey, the umpires are sometimes better than we give them credit for. And they'll have to be reeled back in a little bit. So
yeah,
I think it's just another way to you know, hold the umpires a little bit accountable, but also, you know, keeping the game in its purest form.
You know, Kev, obviously this is the 10th anniversary of our 2015 team, which you were a part of. And every time I got one of those guys on, one of my questions was, you know, because I've been asked it many times, What was the sense in the clubhouse, and you were in there, when all of a sudden in July we started adding big pieces? What was the mindset of, that you thought that was yours when you started seeing the likes of Kelly Johnson and Addison Reed and, you know, Juan Uribe and all these you know, guys coming in there? What was your thought process at that particular time? You remember it?
Yeah, it was wild, you know, and being a rookie, I was constantly looking over my shoulder, like, who's going to come in and take my job? But no, it was awesome, man. It was such a good group of guys, you know, and I talk to people all the time about this, and I've been on some good teams even after the Mets, but it's like the teams that gel together, you know, play well together, not necessarily are the most talented on the field. Granted, we had a ton of talent, but we got along extremely well in the locker room, off the field, on the flights, you know, constantly going to dinners together, and we got into new cities. And that to me just made us such a close knit group where, you know, when we went out to play the game, it was, we knew we were going to win, you know, and not every night, of course, but, you know, we had such a good group of guys that just cared for each other, and we meshed so well together. And, you know, that's invaluable to me. I think that's how you, you know, create a winning culture. And, you know, you can say talk culture and this and that all you want, but you bring in new pieces and this and that, and everybody's fitting in great. And, you know, then you start winning some games, and then we start winning more games, and then you realize, damn, we're pretty freaking close to winning, winning the division and whatnot. And so, you know, then from there, it just, you got to have fun with it, enjoy it, you know? And like I said, that first year for me was a lot of, my head was just spinning. When are you going to call me in to send me back down? And how am I doing? Yada, yada, yada. It's all part of it. It's real stuff, but.
You should. Yeah, I wish you had came in. I would have told you we weren't going anywhere. You know.
hey, that was some of the best times of my life, and those guys were awesome, and we had a really good group of guys. And
yeah,
no, it was a fun time to be a Met. Really fun time to be a Met for sure.
Yeah. Well, Kev, John.
Genug vom täglichen Grind. Spiele Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 und 4 und grinde, als wär's 2002. Ein legendäres Remake der Originalspiele mit neuen Parks, krasseren Tricks, plattformübergreifendem Multiplayer und abgefahrenen neuen Spielmodi. Hol dir das neue Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 und 4 und zeig der Welt, der Shred stirbt nie. Jetzt vorbestellen auf tonyhawkthegame.com/playnow. Verfügbar ab dem 11. Juli.
John always has some questions in line for it, so I'm going to turn it back to him for a few.
Thank you, Terry. Kevin, your first career home run came against Hall of Famer C.C. Sabathia during the Subway Series at Yankee Stadium, April 25th, 2015. You were the first player in MLB history to hit his first homer during a Subway Series game. A game the Mets won 8-2, dominating performance by Matt Harvey, went 8 2/3. It was your fourth Major League Baseball game. What was it like stepping into that rivalry between the Mets and the Yankees? And tell us about your emotions rounding the bases.
Pretty surreal, pretty cool. I remember that my like first welcome to the big leagues moment was when A-Rod came to the bat and hit me in the shin guards and was like, Kevin, how are you? And I was like, fucking Alex Rodriguez, you know? So that was pretty cool. I was like, and I'm in Yankee Stadium. I'm catching Matt Harvey. This is, you know, pretty fucking nuts. It was awesome. But, no, honestly, at that point, fourth day in the big leagues, fifth day, whatever you said it was just trying to find barrel, trying to hit something hard. And I think he threw me a changeup, honestly. And I hit it and I'm like, I know it's a hit. It's a hit. And it just kind of kept going and it hit it hard enough to get over. I think Brett Gardner was in left, but all the emotions of the world, my brother was actually in town. Finally, he couldn't make my debut. So he had flown in. So he was able to be there for that homer, which is really cool with my mom and dad and my wife. And so it was awesome. It was really cool. Can't make it up. And I remember it very, very well.
Very cool place to hit your first home run during a Subway Series game. The Mets regaining momentum in 2015, you know, those pieces that Terry talked about, and then bringing Cespedes in. And then we had Michael Kadir on the show not too long ago. And he began this daily award for player of the game, which became a regular ceremony for the team during that season. And I think it still continues somewhat today. You were tasked with helping pick the award that was presented to the player of the game, which was a WWE championship belt, which went over big with the clubhouse. Why don't you tell us about that role that you played? And, you know, I heard there were a lot of wrestling fans there in that clubhouse at that time. So talk to us about you and Kadir coming up with that, and you were tasked with getting that belt, I believe, right?
Yeah, I actually saw that segment that Kadir had with you guys as well. As far as the WWE side, I'm not sure who was a fan or not. I'm not really a huge fan. I don't really watch it a whole lot. I don't really know how it became into a belt. I know that Lange was kind of doing our post-game celebrations, and we had enough of that, and so we had to think of something else to get the guys going. And Cuddy was we were talking someday, and somehow I said, "Let me just try and make a belt, you know, something like that." And so I got online or whatever, and somehow made this belt. It turned out pretty sick. He paid me for it, thank God. At the time, you know, he was making a lot more money than I was, so I think he reimbursed me for that. And then after that, he'd present it to the player of the game afterwards, and then each person would sign the back of it, and then you'd get the tally marks on the back, how many times you won the belt, player of the game. And I think he gave it to Jeff or Fred Wilpon, I believe, after that season, for them to have after that run. But that was a cool way to just bring the guys together. Not corny about it at all. It was natural. It was, I think that's the biggest thing with those post-game celebrations things. They can be, you know, kind of corny, and if you will, but this was organic. Yeah. The guys liked it. Cuddy did a great job, you know, presenting it. If it wasn't Cuddy, it was Grandy or something like that. Somebody had a lot of feel, and it was read the room really well. And those guys were amazing veterans, you know, to have in the clubhouse. You know, we had so many of them when I first came up. I was so thankful for that. And, you know, it's just another way to bring the group together, and you know, it's another way for us to you know, get closer. So it was pretty cool.
Very cool. I got a couple more for you. The Mets have two upcoming promotions this season that will be highly anticipated. The first is July 19th. David Wright, number 5, gets retired. He'll be inducted in the Mets Hall of Fame. From a player and a teammate perspective, talk to us about David Wright, his leadership, and what he meant to you and your fellow teammates.
I don't know if I can put it into words, to be honest. He's a special, special human being. The aura he has, you know, having played with him when I first, you know, got called up, even in spring training, and then unfortunately having to see him go through the rehab process with his back and just the day-to-day grind and just the positivity he had throughout it all, but also just the work ethic that he showed was there for all of us, even if he couldn't be out there. But you know, he's just he's a good friend. We've played some golf now, you know, in Southern California from time to time, even whether I was still playing and being in Anaheim and I'd call him up to get on his nice fancy country club or whatnot, you know. So he's just an awesome friend. He's a extreme competitor, but now I know he's enjoying his family, and you know, nobody does it the Mets way better, I think, than David Wright. So super happy for him and just happy to be, you know, a small part of, you know, being able to experience the David Wright experience, I guess, if you will, at Citi Field or in a Mets uniform, because it was pretty special. So super, super happy for him, and, you know, it'd be awesome.
Very well deserved for David, and everyone can't wait for that. But the other event takes place in September 13th, when you return to Citi Field and participate in the Mets Alumni Classic game. Several of your former teammates and, of course, your skipper for the day, TC, will be at the helm. How excited are you about that day, and are there any teammates, coaches that you look forward to catching up with that you haven't seen in a long time?
Yeah, everybody. I texted Syndergaard the other day when he signed with the White Sox. I said, "What, the alumni game must not have been that important to you." So there's that. So thanks, Noah. But I wish him all the best. We'll hold it down for him, hopefully the best we can. But I've been talking to Newen Heist a little bit, and you know, I know everybody's busy. So it'll be nice to get a lot of the group back together, you know, from a decade ago, or you know, even beyond that. So it'll be awesome. I'm looking forward to it. My wife and I haven't been back to the city in a long time, so it'll be nice to go back to where it all began for us, and really looking forward to it. It'll be a fun weekend.
Who do you want to catch?
I don't know, Skip. You just put me wherever you want me.
R.A. is going to be there, so I told Tully he's going to catch R.A. because he made a career out of it. So I thought I'll have you and Harv, or you and Bartolo, you'll have some fun. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that'd be awesome to see all those guys.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
It'd be great. It'd be awesome.
Well, that's very cool. I really appreciate you coming on. I'm going to toss it back to TC. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin. Again, thank you so much for being on. I'm sure, you know, great conversations. I hope you stay in the game a long time. I know it's tough. You know, you got you good fathers. You know, I know I talked to Kadir about it. You know, I've offered Kadir jobs and I want to be a dad for a while. And, you know, I see David down. He comes to Florida once in a while and, you know, we'll get together and he's, you know, very happy being a dad. So at least I'm glad you're still involved and stay involved. And I just hope one of these days I turn the TV on and see you in the dugout because I think you got everything it would take to be a great manager in the game. And, you know, the game needs – we need some great leadership and you're one of the guys. So thanks for coming on and good luck. And tell Taylor I said hi, please.
I will. Thanks a lot. It means a lot. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And we'll see you in a few short months.
Yeah, we'll see you in September. I'll get it set up for you.
All right. See you soon.
All right,
guys.
Man. Thanks, pal.
See you.
Great to have Kevin on the show today, TC. Nice guy. Happy to hear he's doing well.
Yeah, me too. He's, you know, he was a real pro. This guy, you know, I tell you, when you're in a backup position like Kevin was when he was with me in New York, you know, Travis Darnold was our that's a tough position because you're a guy who's basically been a starter your whole career and nobody kept himself more prepared than Kevin Pilecki.
Well, wonderful to have him on the show. And I'm sure you look forward to seeing him on September the 13th. That'll be a lot of fun. Well, Terry, over the course of the past year, Tunnel of Towers continues to spread the word about the foundation through a series of stories and PSAs, which we bring to you every week right here on the show. Today, as we promised, we have the privilege of debuting the story about David Wright, the captain, number 5. Let's go to that right now.
I'm David Wright, former New York Mets third baseman, and I support the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. My father was in the Army Reserves and then went on to work his way up the Norfolk Police Department to assistant chief. At the time, growing up, didn't quite know the challenges or the risks or the dangers of the job, but now that I have kids of my own, I certainly appreciate his service, the dedication to the craft, and obviously serving the community. Because I grew up in a household with a police officer as a father, I see firsthand the impact that these men and women make on their communities. Each year of my career, you know, we would go visit different firehouses. And to hear the stories firsthand from coworkers, friends, brothers, sisters that had lost a family member in 9/11, it's an incredible feeling to hear the stories, although incredibly sad, but just the way their mind works and the mindset of a true hero running towards the problem and not away from it. We should do what we can to help the first responders because it's very easy to overlook the work that they do on a daily basis until you actually really need them. And again, they'll be the first ones there to help. So it's nice to be able to reciprocate that and to help them as much as we can.
This newly renovated smart home marks a fresh start in the lives of those who deserve it the most.
I think it's incredibly important to support Tunnel to Towers. I've seen firsthand the great work they do helping our firefighters, our police, and our soldiers and their families. T2T is asking for your support for these brave men and women. Just $11 a month will go a long way and make a big difference. Let's go Mets! And let's help Tunnel to Towers. Go to t2t.org to find out more. Let's do good together.
Terry, so good to see David Wright involved with T2T now.
Yeah, you can't get a better promoter than him. I and he, as I've said many times, you know, when you see his face or he starts to say something, he gets people's attention. So I'm glad he's involved.
Yes, so is the organization. So happy to see David involved with Tunnel of Towers. And we're going to be bringing David on the show sometime in the near future to discuss his number of retirement and induction into the Mets Hall of Fame. That takes place on July 19th. We all look forward to that. And, of course, we'll have another TDT story right here on our next show. Before we say goodbye this week, we want to remind everybody to check out Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz, a New York Mets podcast hosted by the foremost Mets historian. Each week, Jay brings on the guests from all eras in Mets history. That's Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz, available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube. And Terry, I'm sure you're looking forward to seeing Jay when you get up to New York.
Absolutely. It's always fun to be around him. And, you know, he's always got something going on. That's what he keeps himself very busy.
Yes, so,
I'm excited for him. I'm telling you, as we get into the summer, John, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be talking about that baseball classic in September coming up.
Everybody's looking forward to it. We want to invite everybody here to subscribe to the Terry Collins Show on your favorite podcast platform or on our YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/ the Terry Collins Show. Our entire archives from the past two seasons are available on the YouTube channel, including highlights and clips from each one of our shows. And Terry, that'll wrap up this edition of the Terry Collins Show. Great to see you as always. We'd like to thank Marsh, our creative director, our researcher, Dominic DiBiase. For Terry Collins, this is John Arezzi. We'll see you next time.